Okay, no problem. Okay, hello Morro Bay, and welcome to the Monday, November 4th, 2013episode of Public Works Advisory Agenda on board. Please be advised that we have six members in attendance. Richard Rutherford was not able to make it, but we do have a quorum. So the meeting begins. And so as we start, could we have a moment of silence, please? All right. Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to go to announcements. Do we have any announcements from the board?
None from me.
None. Okay. with that, I am in receipt of one email letter from Red Davis, but it pertains to an item on the agenda later about San Jacinto Street. But just to let you know that we did have that correspondence. With that said, do we have any members of the public here that would like to come up and address the board? Please come up and state your name.
Good evening, Chair and board members. My name is Linda Merrill, and I live at 391 Sequoia Street, which is real close to your item number C3. And I would like to say that I agree with the city engineer's recommendations to remove all street parking, add a bike lane on the north side, restripe the center line so that people aren't going into the oncoming traffic, please, and look for additional funding. I'd also like to mention that as we speak, there is a dinner being held at the Wee Shack for the bike park. And so if you haven't had dinner yet, I hope that you'll make it over there. And they have wonderful raffle tickets, two bicycles, and wonderful hamburgers. So if you can make it, that'd be great to support our upcoming bike park. Thank you. Also, I wanted to say my neighbor, Cindy Heimel, also agrees with the engineer's conclusions. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for the public comment. My wife is also at the Wee Shack for this fundraiser. I'm not, so maybe they'll bring me something home to eat. Also, I understand, Lanny, if you want, we have your item later. If you'd like to speak to it now or later.
Later's fine.
Okay, then. But Linda just wanted, she needed to do that right now. Do we have another public comment? Thank you.
Yeah, the first comment was, now on C2, is that going to be open for public comment?
Well, we could do it either way. If you
would like to
stay and speak to it right then, that's totally fine. Do you have another public comment?
I do.
Could you state your name, please?
My name is Bill Martini, Morro Bay. And I had a question, and when I was listening to the last city council meeting on your bike trail or the bridge that's going across the creek, is it my understanding that the negotiations or the easement hasn't been perfected yet with Dynegy? Because I thought I heard that. I thought this was all in place and, you know, it was all ready to go and being put out to bid. And then I thought I picked up something that had not been finalized. They were still trying to get that approved. So that was my one question, if that could be answered. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Rob, can you speak to that or...
Sure. There is a piece of property that Dynegy owns that has the dirt embarcadero going across it. There is to that. So I don't know if they presumed it was a prescriptive easement or if they knew for sure, but we're working with the surveyor that prepared that Alta survey, and going to be resolving those questions. And those questions need to be resolved before we go to construction, which will be probably sometime in summer of next year.
Cool. I'm so glad you had your answer there. Now, do we have any idea, since that had never been brought up to me before, cost for that? Or will there be a cost? Or is Dynegy just going to give it to us?
We haven't really commenced negotiation with them. I would suspect that it's going to be little or no cost.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Thank you very much. Do we have any other public comments before we get to the various items on the agenda? No. Okay, moving on. We go to item number A, consent calendar. We have a number of minutes from our past meetings in the past month and a half. And then we also have a report on the North Coast Transit Survey and a director's report. I'll just go down the line if anybody has any comments. And usually we don't do this in terms of doing a group acceptance of everything, but if no one has anything to say, so...
No.
Marcus, Steve?
I just have a question on the director's report, and it concerns the state water. And the first question was how the public was notified of the state water shutoff. I'm sure they were. I just had several people ask me, and I didn't know the answer.
And I just noticed on the TV station, Marlis, and that's exactly where my question was, because that seems to be the big item right this month. So, Rob, can you speak to that?
Sure. The city did a press release on the state water shutdown. We've had it posted on the city's website, and it rolls on Channel 20, also notifying that. We've also made the announcement that over the past couple months at all of our public meetings, at least that I've been in attendance at, so to make that announcement that the state water is being shut down. And we are under state water shutdown as we speak, so we're drinking good old manufactured water right here in Morro Bay, coming from our brackish water treatment trains at the desal plant.
Oh.
Very good.
I can see a commercial coming from Morro Bay. It tastes good. That's filling.
Yeah.
All right.
And one more question on the same issue. I noticed in your report it said that when the state water is on, it provides 35% of requested water. And I seem to remember in an earlier report it provides 97% of our water. So I'm just wondering if you can clarify that for me.
Sure. What this is referring to is we have an allocation for 1,313 acre feet without our drought buffer. So statewide, they're only providing 35% of the overall allocation. So without our drought buffer, we would only get 35% of 1,313. With our drought buffer, we get 100% of the water we request up to 36.5%, I think, is the break point where it starts to reduce down. But on top of that drought buffer, we have water in storage at San Luis Reservoir. So over the past few years, we haven't been taking our full allocation. We've been 150 or 200 feet less than what our allocation is every year, mainly because of the state water shutdown. And that goes into storage at San Luis Reservoir up by Hollister area, a little bit inland from there. But and until San Luis Reservoir spills, which means it's rained a lot, we can rely on that water in storage.
Is that all right? You good there, Marlis? Okay, Stephen.
I'm fine.
Okay, Jan. Okay, and with that, did anybody have anything to say about the various synopsis of minutes?
No, I just moved to accept the approval of the minutes on the consent calendar as a whole.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, and with that, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Okay, motion carries. So acceptance of A1. Talk about the volume being high, huh? Okay, we move on to... old business. There is no old business, and so we go to new business. And so first item is C1, Morro Bay Transit Options for Weekend Service. And with that, do I pass it over to you, Janine?
Thank you and good evening. Just a quick little history of how we came to have this item here with you tonight. In the summer of this year, July 9th to be precise, the City Council had directed staff to bring an item to the Public Works Advisory Board regarding evaluating options for providing weekend service on Morro Bay Transit 2013 project. And what that project was doing was surveying all of the fixed route services along the North Coast, which included Morro Bay Transit and Morro Bay Trolley, in order to get information of various rider demographics, boarding and alighting information, as well as inquiring if there are any improvements to existing transit services that would be requested from riders. So as you have already seen in the consent calendar, there was an item regarding some technical memos that had the specific information from those surveys in draft form for your review and comment back to the Council of Governments for their consultant to incorporate in with their final final draft report for those technical memos. So some of that information you've seen in the previous agenda item, and some of that's also included in the discussion item here. And both of those were used by staff to develop various options for consideration. So just real briefly, existing transit services within Morro Bay, we have both local and regional. The local services are Morro Bay Transit, which I've already explained is a weekday, Monday through Friday, year-round general public service. And then the trolley service is seasonal, and it runs Friday through Monday, Memorial Day to Labor Day weekend, and then it goes to just Saturdays and Sundays from Labor Day weekend to the first weekend in October. So we do have a small amount of local ridership on the trolley services during the time that it's in operation. And so some people, particularly it seems in the north end of town, use that service to get into the downtown area on the weekends. And that's really kind of their only access, because the regional services that are provided 7 days a week, the service that runs north to San Simeon, Route 15, really doesn't travel through the north part of Morro Bay. It has a stop at City Park and then continues on north. And then coming back south, it has a stop along the highway on San Jacinto. So if you're in the beach tract area and can walk to that location, or you're kind of across the highway a short distance and are able to walk to that stop, you're able to get into the downtown at that time. So when staff was developing different options to consider, we also included a year-round option, even though the direction from council was to look at when the trolley was in the off-season. And we felt that it was appropriate to do that because you would open up the transit services to a wider audience, to basically encompass the whole of the community, the whole of the Morro Bay Transit community, rather than just those individuals that would be kind of right along the trolley routes, because Morro Bay Transit has the call-a-ride function, which deviates off the fixed route and can do some door-to-door service within 3/4 of a mile. And the trolley doesn't provide that service during the time that it operates. So starting on pages 3 and 4, we basically came up with 6 different options. 3 options for year-round service and 3 options for when the trolley is in the off-season. And they're basically the same options. It's just whether it's a 12-month period or the 9-month period. And it encompasses basically either Saturday only, Sunday only, or a combination of Saturday and Sunday. So those make up the 6 different options. So I'm not going to go over the individual costs and revenue estimates and the fare box ratios for each of those. You can see on pages 3 and 4, and also in attachment 2, what those individual statistics are. I do want to note that fare box ratio is being used as a primary determinant on whether or not to recommend one of these items to move forward for implementation. And that is because the fare box ratio is something that is required, a minimum 10% is required by the state in order to receive our Transportation Development Act, or TDA, funds. And we have 2 components of that. We have local transportation funds and we have state transit assistance funds. And if we were to fall below the 10% ratio, we enter a penalty assessment in which determining what that amount is would be to calculate the amount of fares that you would have needed to receive to reach that 10% and subtract that from the actual fares that you did receive. And that's your penalty. So we would lose local transportation funds to our area for that penalty. So we don't want to just offer a service if we know that it's not going to meet that 10%. So that's why in the various options I've included the estimated fare box ratio. In the survey that we, the onboard survey that we did for Morro Bay Transit, we had included a question about the fare category. What fare did an individual typically recovery? So with that, basically options 2, 4, 5, and 6, which are the Sunday only services and the Saturday and Sunday services, particularly the Sunday only, fall well below the 10%. They're in about the 5% range and a little bit lower than that. And then the Saturday and Sunday combined come just a little over 8% fare box ratio. So staff is not recommending that either of those four options be recommended to the council as something to implement. The other two options, options 1 and 3, are projected to reach just about 10% fare box ratio, 10.3% with the year-round and 10% even for the trolley off-season option. And so really either one could be recommended, but staff is recommending the year-round option for Saturday only because, again, as I mentioned earlier, it would provide a level of service to the full Morro Bay Transit as well as the full city population and provide a greater opportunity for those individuals and not just those who live within the trolley corridor. And so staff is recommending option one with that. Staff is also recommending, because there's some uncertainty with the fare box ratio, we had a situation when we operated the former dial-a-ride service, the demand response service, where we added Saturday service. And what we saw, instead of an increased amount of riders on that day, we saw that people were shifting the pattern of when they rode the service. So you had someone who maybe rode 5 days a week with 10 trips, and instead of, oh, now I have Saturday, I can go out and do some more things and have maybe a couple of more trips and have 12 trips between those 6 days, they just shifted their 10 rides that they had been over 6 days instead of five. And what resulted in that was you have less revenue, fare revenue coming in, which impacts your fare box ratio. So it's likely that that type of travel pattern shift would occur again. To what extent is unknown. And it may be a little bit different this time because we are operating a deviated fixed route, so a person is not having to call in. There's not only a set number of rides that could be provided with a demand response service. So there may not be as much of that shift as occurred previously. But again, it's an unknown as to whether that shift would occur and to what extent. So staff is also recommending that this service be implemented on a pilot basis for a year and then do a review in 6 months of the actual ridership to see what kind of impact that ridership shifting between the days may occur or to what extent that may occur and whether that would affect the fare box ratio in such a way that, taken through the whole year with all the transit services, might create a negative impact overall, which may get us to closer to the 10% or fall below that 10%. So that's another recommendation. What I should mention is that as in terms of the funding, there is no general fund impact for this. What staff is recommending is, since all of our Transportation Development Act funds for this fiscal year have been allocated already, that this be implemented starting July 1 of 2014. And when we're preparing our budget for next fiscal year, to include in with our TDA allocations and allocation for adding that Saturday service year-round to the regular Morro Bay Transit Monday through Friday service. And that's a little over $15,200 is what's being estimated at this point. So that's another recommendation that staff is putting out for the board to consider. And so with that, what I'd like to do is turn it over to the board and have you consider the various options that have been provided, take any public testimony regarding the options, and to recommend that the City Council expand transit service on Saturdays year-round on Morro Bay Transit for an 8-hour day beginning July 1, 2014, to also recommend that the City Council authorize the allocation of $15,300 from the fiscal year 13-14 Transportation Development Act funds for Saturday year-round service, and to recommend that the city implement the weekend service on a trial basis for 1 year with a review of the actual ridership and fare box ratio impact after 6 months. And with that, I'll turn it over to the board for any questions or comments.
Well, thanks a lot. That was a very nice explanation. Do we have any folks in the audience who'd like to have a public comment on this item? No? We can move the microphone closer. Okay, so do we...
And we're looking at about a 12.6% fare box ratio. So it's gone up from the prior year. And in Morro Bay Transit alone, we saw about a 2.5% increase in our fare box ratio if you're just looking at that system alone. And part of that is, you know, with the first year that was talked about, that was the first year's numbers. You were looking at like 4.5% or something percent. Changing from a completely different type of transit service to a new one, people are getting adjusted to it. Some riders went away, some were coming back. We have a lot of new riders that use the service. And so as people are getting used to that and realizing, hey, there's public transit out there and it's a little bit more accessible to some individuals than it might have in the past, they're starting to use that. And so we have seen an increase in the ridership and the fare box ratio because of that. So there's really not too much of a concern with potentially having a penalty, but we do want to be mindful of that fare box ratio and not backing ourselves towards it. We want to go further from it.
Thank you. Okay. No questions? No? Yeah. Janine, so you're going to have on Saturday, support this. You're going to have the bus running in addition to the trolley on Saturdays.
During the trolley season, the Morro Bay Transit would be running in addition to the trolley services, and they kind of serve two different populations. The trolley service is much more tourist oriented, and I think in the staff report there's between 10% and 13% local use versus non-local use. And the Morro Bay Transit service is mostly exclusively local service.
And so they'll be taken together to determine this 10% so that one won't be taking away from the other?
No, one will not be taking away from the other. Okay. We have funding available for both.
Okay.
Stephen?
Oh, okay. Just one quick question. The TDA monies, is that SLOCOG or is that the state actually funding?
TDA is state. It's an act that was put into place by the state back in the sometime in the 70s, mid-late 70s.
And it sounds like you don't have it in the present budget, so you're looking to put it in 2014 around June.
Correct.
Is it pretty much guaranteed if you ask for it, you get it kind of a thing, or?
Well, would
the city council be put in a spot where they have to come out of general fund monies if the TDA didn't come through on it?
Well, what happens is every year the Council of Governments gets a funding estimate from the state, I think the Department of Finance, of what will be the amount of TDA funds received by the region. And then it's broken down by the local transportation fund and the state transit assistance fund. And so they put together a draft allocation in April to their board, and then we use that draft allocation to develop our budget for June. So,
and you feel you have a pretty good confidence that you could get the 15,000 additional?
Yes, we currently, for this year, we had a surplus of TDA funds. So we don't think that we'll be backpedaling. You know, typically, if we're not experiencing any kind of growth, we just sort of go along the lines of we'll have the same amount of funding that we have this year. Mm. So if we'd already had a more than 15,000 surplus this year, it's likely we'll have at least that much next year. Okay. So we feel confident that we will have that funding available for next fiscal year to put into the budget.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just have a question along the same lines. Exactly what proportion would this $15,000 be of the money that you typically get?
We get in, once we take the bike path and pedestrian money, that's a required set aside, 2% off the top. once we have our allocation to the Regional Transit Authority taken off the top, we have about $357,000 available for allocation to our own existing programs and services. And I can't say off the top of my head what the trolley and the transit budget has right now, but we had about an $80,000 surplus for last year that we've allocated some to the Morro Creek Bridge project, some to the senior van program that's currently in development, and then a small amount for contingencies in case fuel prices went crazy, which has occurred in the past, and that's always an item that is very hard to try to pin down budget-wise. And then also a set-aside reserve for the portion of funding for the performance audits that are required every 3 years. So I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head what percentage that 15,000 would represent.
No, but it sounds like it's a small percentage and that it's covered. You're not having to give up something else to
correct,
do this.
Correct, correct.
I can't see it that the estimated cost for the trolley, the off-season, is roughly, what is it, about $5,300 less. Is there a reason the trolley is so much less than the other?
Well, this is for the Morro Bay Transit cost. It's not the trolley cost versus Morro Bay Transit. And so what's happening is if you're only looking at that, the off-season hours for Morro Bay Transit, you see in attachment 2, you have much fewer hours of operation. So your driver cost, your vehicle service hour cost would be lower. You would have some difference in fuel because you're not running the vehicle for those hours. You would have a little bit less in maintenance. Advertising would be a little bit less because there would be that initial bump, but you wouldn't have in those other months that are not being operated, you wouldn't be having that advertising cost. So that's where you see some of the differences, and it's purely because you're not operating as many hours as you are year-round.
Okay, that makes wonderful sense. Thank you. And my last question is about number 5, option 5, year-round Saturday and Sunday. We don't have the fare box ratio, but 8.3, it's 1.7 less than 10% we meet, which I think ties to my question on advertising and getting the message out, because wow, if we got the 10% fare box ratio for option number 5, that seemed to be a slam dunk, right? And so, I mean, your recommendation for option 1, I totally understand, given the fare box ratio. Is there any idea or plans to try to get number 5 through to up the fare box ratio?
Not at this point in time. It would be something if the council really wanted to pursue having both and having the funding available to do that. They can always recommend that we do that, and then you do the pilot project, you come back in 6 months, and if it looks like we're not coming close to that fare box ratio, they can end the service at that point. I would like to mention that That's it.
Okay. That's it. All my questions. And so with that, can we have a recommendation? Okay. With that, that's all the public, the comment from the board. So we see we have discussion, and we see the staff has made a recommendation for option number 1, and the recommendation is here. To me, it's straightforward.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say I really appreciated your building in that 6 month trial period.
Microphone.
And I noticed that it was 3 months during.
I appreciate your building in the trial period, which includes both on season and off season, so you can really see what the impact is. And it seems to me that's really a very helpful addition. And it's my comment.
Very much agree. So would someone like to make a recommendation? And would you like us to make a recommendation and read your recommendations, or can we just say something like make a motion to go with the recommendations made by staff?
You can move staff recommendation. You can read staff's recommendation,
okay.
Whatever the motion maker would like.
Okay, no problem.
So would like someone like to make this motion?
I so move that we accept staff recommendations 1 through 4 as stated.
I think we just need to approve the recommendation she wants us to approve. I would authorize the allocation of $15,300 from the fiscal year 13-14 Transportation Development Act funds for Saturday year-round service.
Okay. But in a way, Marlis, that is including recommendations two. Do you want to change something from recommendations to number two through four?
Well, I think you just, do you just want us to recommend?
I had a motion on the floor that we didn't get a second.
Okay. Do we have a second for this motion? There's no
staff recommendation.
Yes, I'll second that recommendation.
Okay. So, with that, motion's on the floor with a second. And we'll have a vote, and let's see how it goes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those not in favor? So it's unanimous. The motion carries. We will go with that. Okay. And I understand the point, and I think she was just putting clarification.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if she – I was just going to ask if you wished to have the entire set of alternatives included or just the recommendation. That's all.
And that was included with
– I think he was referring to
the original motion.
Oh.
Okay. So the motion has been made and seconded, and so those are, I think, a really nice recommendation to go with this service. So moving on. So we're on to C1. We go to C2, which is the public draft options report for the new water reclamation facility recommendation. We're going to receive the report, take public testimony, and forward any recommendations to staff. And so, Rob, this is your item?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We got to this point based on a substantial issues hearing for the existing wastewater treatment plant back in January, and our permit was denied by the California Coastal Commission. After that meeting, council embarked upon a work effort that would select a site or sites and treatment options that we would want to look at for further design build a wastewater treatment plant somewhere in the next 7 or so years. This options report is the next major step in this work effort. It analyzes the 17 sites that the previous study by DUDEC analyzed, plus they added in a couple of more that got brought up in earlier public comment periods. So the next step after council were to review this options report and select any potential sites would move on with facilities master planning, environmental analysis of the site, any permitting required, any annexation that may or may not be needed, and then design and finally construction. And our goal is to try to finish that aggressive work efforts in the next 7 years. With that, I'll turn it back over to the board. If you have any questions or comments that I can relay on to the options report consultant, that they can address at tomorrow night's meeting. Thank you.
And also, I guess you're inviting us also to the meeting also tomorrow?
Definitely. No,
I got an email.
and I'm putting him on blast here, folks, just for you. We have people at home. If you haven't been watching Channel 20, there's a big meeting tomorrow. And at what time is it?
It's at 6 p.m. at this very site here.
Okay.
And we'll have Morro Bay water, I think.
Okay.
Maybe some bottled water. I'm not sure. But we'll have water and some treats to keep everybody awake. It's only planned on being a couple-hour-long meeting, so I know sometimes these can tend to get drawn out a bit long, and we lose some of our audience, but we're trying to, you know, condense this work effort into a two-hour period, about an hour of presentation and an hour of interaction is what's planned for that meeting. Again, 6 p.m., Vets Hall tomorrow night, be on televised on Channel 20 also. And the next step after that is a city council meeting on November 12th, where council will give their official comments back to the report authors, who will make any edits, and then bring the final report back to council sometime in December. I think the December 10th meeting is the plan. I don't think they're going to hold a meeting on Christmas Eve.
Okay. Okay, so with that, before we get started, do we have any folks in the audience that would like to come up and have public comment on this item? All right, just come up and state your name at the microphone. Thank you.
Hi, good evening again. Bill Martini, Morro Bay. I did try briefly reading through the draft, and I mainly came tonight to learn. I was thinking it was going to be duplicated tomorrow night, so I was going to attend two of these, but it sounds like tomorrow's going to be the main meeting. One of the things in the draft that I was kind of, I guess you might call it sticker shock, is where they're estimating the actual treatment plant from 90 to 160 million. As I was reading the report, the original plant was going to cost, I believe, $34 million in its present site. I think to actually take it and to move it to another site, in my opinion, it's not going to cost, you know, maybe your land value, maybe $1 million for a pipeline, but I don't know where they're coming up with $90 to $160 million to move it to another site. The comment, when I heard that, I called up on a sewer plant that's presently being built in just outside of Oceanside. Just for your information, it's a 5.5 million gallon a day site. That's probably four times plus the size of Morro Bay. That is an MBR plant, virtually clean water coming out the other end. They're going to demo the existing plant. Total cost, $55 million. And that's start to finish. So I've always heard $25 million for an MBR to $35 million, somewhere in that range, and I just wanted the general public, that a lot of people are being hammered. Now it's going to cost $90 to $160 million to rights to that property for $1.5 million. So that shouldn't even have been studied. But anyway, the point is, I think, for everyone to show up tomorrow to learn about the different processes and also to make sure the prime location on the Tri-W site that wasn't studied gets included. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill, for your comments. All right, public comment. Come on up and state your name.
Bob Keller, Morro Bay. Bill did all the research because I don't have the time to do what he did. But I am behind this Tri-W property. It makes the most sense to me economically, and it's a location close to the city, and it has the valleys back there where you can build ponds. And I support him, but I don't have all the details yet, but I support all his details. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Do we have any other public comments for this item? Okay. With that, so Robbie, you'd like to see if we have any comments. Do we need any sort of recommendation tonight here?
No, I'm taking notes, and I'll relay this to the Rickenbach team probably tonight so they can get ready to address the concerns tomorrow. I know they're already getting prepared to well address the cost issues. As with most engineers, we tend to be conservative at this early stage of cost estimating. So costs tend to be higher when you're estimating at the beginning of projects.
Okay, and with that, how about if we start here? We'll start in the middle right now. Jan, do you have any questions for this?
I don't have a question. I just have a comment here that I was very impressed with this presentation because it made it very easy to follow and compare and contrast everything. So thank you to whoever put that together. And I was even able to make sense of it after I read had the sticker shock of the prize. But it was very well presented. Thank you.
I just had a question. I'm not familiar with the Tri-W site. Can you tell me where it is?
If you were to go up Morro Bay Boulevard and proceed straight through the roundabout toward the hillside on the other side of the freeway. I think that's kind of the center of the Tri-W site. Is that... So Bill just stated it goes from Seashell Communities, which would be to the east there, or southeast, to basically the Radcliffe neighborhood to the northwest.
Is it not Site C on your overview of study sites, or is it behind it?
I think
Site C is Chorro Valley.
Yeah, but
It looks really.
That's why I'm a little confused. I'm not sure where Tri-W is, but what you're describing sounds like there.
We'll get clarification from John about how far he looked into the valley area.
Yeah, if you could come up to the microphone, it'd be better that way.
The Tri-W site is approximately 160 acres is inside the city limits of Morro Bay, and 400 acres is agricultural zoned outside the city limits of Morro Bay. The 400 acres that was left off the study is the valley right behind the Seashells community. So it's actually in three separate parcels, and then there's a 17-acre separate parcel that has a different zoning on it. That is an island inside the 160 acres that is also not in your study. The 17 acres is probably your prime location, but the out-of-sight area would be over by the Seashell Committee, but there's multiple sites. And this property has been offered for sale in the past. Mm-hmm. So
if you look at Area C there that is just kind of northeasterly of kind of the main... South Morro Bay area. There's a cutoff line. If you go northeasterly of that line, there's still some Tri-W property back in that area.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it seemed like it was right in the same proximity looking at this.
Yeah, it looks like item number C, the Chorro Valley, part of it, the ownership is Tri-W. So is that part of the parcel?
It's part of the parcel, but they didn't, from what Bill is saying, they didn't look at the 400 acres to the northeast.
It'd be the north on the inside, like on the northeast side.
Kind of
on
beyond, the other side of the there's seashell. A little bit of a rise there, mm-hmm. and under the other side of those hills, there's a little bit of a valley there.
Oh, I got it. So it'd be the northeast corner of that sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that where those high tension, the power
playing fields? So all the same cost assumptions were used at each of the sites. So before we got to that level, we would need to pick a site and further explore what it would really cost to build a wastewater treatment or a water reclamation facility there. This is a very high level cost estimating. We are, looking from 20,000 feet up. We're not at ground level yet doing actual surveys and seeing what the grading would take on site, seeing what actual facilities would be there. These cost estimates, I would say, at this point are fairly conservative. There's a 30% contingency and up to 30% allowance for engineering, admin, and other fees. That might be especially high for the higher dollar facilities. Typically, let's use just round numbers. If you had a $5 million construction effort to a $100 million construction effort, of course the $100 million construction effort is going to cost more engineering, but it's probably not 20 times more. Sometimes we would like that as engineers, but not all the time is it proportional to the size of the project. So those costs get refined as we get closer to site selection. The point of the study was not to cost out a project per se, but compare the relative costs to build projects on different sites.
Thank you.
All right. Ron, are you done with your questioning?
No.
You had more questions?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Steve?
Yeah, I have a quick question, Rob. How many ratepayers do we actually have in Morro Bay paying for the sewer system?
About 5,600, give or take, 100-ish.
And I guess the second question is, I assume the $90 million that you speak to is probably the one right next to the power plant as far
as we could throw
siting.
A rock and hit it from here.
Where's the one at $160 million?
That's the CMC site, I believe, is the highest.
Oh, site, the one that's way up Troy
Valley. Yeah, the pump station and piping costs are the what really...
Yeah, because, you know, I look at numbers like that, and I look at the number of ratepayers, and all of a sudden I see a $30,000 assessment on every home in Morro Bay trying to cover the capital cost of this. And, you know, it concerns me from the standpoint that you could throw the numbers at it, it may get there, it may not get there, but at the end of the day, sometimes they're not even plausible to be there in the first place, and that's what's concerning me, especially on the $160 million side, and that's a pretty big spread between 90 and 160. The question I have to the power plant site is one of the reasons we're moving it in the first place had to do with tsunamis and wave action and everything else. Is it more protected at the power plant site than it would be at its existing site right now?
It's at a higher elevation there. It's very difficult to see, except if you get right up to the you could go over there and look at that. Well, if it was daylight, we could take a little walk over there. But if you go on Scott Street, there's a chain link fence on the back side of the power plant, and there's some gaps in the hedges. You can actually see down in there. It's at a bench, it's much higher than the treatment plant site, and it slopes down to elevation. It's about, I'm thinking about 10 acres.
So,
yeah. Somewhere in there.
And is that enough land for
yes,
you
it's
to
enough
okay,
land,
pull it off?
But it's not without its issues there. So there will be, being in close proximity to existing residents, there will be odor issues that will need to be addressed. The other issue is, now we can't get into the details of it, but there are cultural resources there. I think some significant cultural resources at that site that would need to be investigated and addressed, and whether mitigation is possible or not.
Is this more like Indian artifacts or something along those lines?
No comment.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I, as far as this goes, I think that's all I have.
Okay,
thank you.
Well, I just have a couple of, first of all, the question about, as we've discussed, this whole issue of what it's going to cost, and already these numbers have appeared in the newspaper, and I think they're going to be very, very frightening to Morro Bay residents.
They're frightening to me.
Yes, and so I did go into the detailed report to look at the cost estimates, and it seemed to me that for comparison purposes, which they were very clear, this is to be able to compare sites to see which one is more expensive than the other, et cetera, et cetera. The Brigetti property is included in the Morro Valley site, and I'm not sure if that's what you were thinking of in that case, but it seems to me that some exploration of that or some discussion of that would be helpful to the council, especially in moving forward. And I was looking through some of the comments in the report, and somebody mentioned that Rancho Colina, which is also in that same Morro Valley site, already has a wastewater treatment plant of some kind. I'm not sure what, but I'm just wondering if that was a consideration and if that's a possibility or if that can be expanded. I'm just looking at other alternatives that seem to me to be kind of out there. And my final question has to do with, are the cultural resources by any chance the Marine Mammal Center and Pacific Wildlife Care?
No, they're archaeological resources.
I'm just wondering if that's where you're talking about.
No, it's closer to the power plant.
It's
so
closer to the power
plant.
Yeah,
you could get there from
the same way you get in.
Yes.
There. Okay.
I just want to address the Rancho Colina wastewater treatment plant because I've heard that a couple of times. You can see that it's a little package plant on the side off of 41. It's a black box, looks like about the size of a railroad car. And then they spray irrigate with the effluent on some fields there. It's probably not the size that we'd be looking for to expand. It's a piece of equipment that you can buy from a variety of manufacturers that's prefabricated for small dischargers like that.
I appreciate that. I just wanted you to know that I actually looked at the report.
Thank you.
That comment.
Okay, and with that, I only had one question, and that was, and especially looking forward to tomorrow's meeting, and I know a lot of these things will be addressed then, but just one thing, reading through the different sites. The site on the Dynegy property, has that ever been explored to work with them to purchase this property or to work with them to put this site there? I know when we talked about making an easement through there, a bicycle easement there, that kind of got pushed off. And if they weren't willing to make a bicycle easement through, maybe getting a wastewater treatment plant there might be a little bit more onerous.
We have not delved into the property acquisition stage or really met with property owners yet. It's probably a little bit premature of that. We're just looking at the relative feasibility of one site to the other. We will address that in much more detail tomorrow night.
And that's all my questions, and I look forward to the meeting tonight. So with that said, we're finished with this item, and we move on to C3, review of San Jacinto Street parking. And with that, this is review of San Jacinto Street parking and striping recommendation. Receive the we're going to have public comment and then talk about it. I'd also before invite anybody who would like to speak to public comment, come up to the microphone. But beforehand, I just want you to let you know that I did receive an email from Robert Fuller Davis, Red Davis, and talking about the existing San Jacinto situation, and he did make a recommendation via email to me about replacing the striping and going back to what it had been, and he cited a number of different issues for pedestrians and bicyclists. So with that, we can open up to public comment for this item.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Sir? Maybe I can give the overview of the staff report before we open it up to public comment. So just in case they might have any questions regarding the staff report. For background, city staff met with representatives from SLOCOG and the elementary school over the summer to try to come up with a safe route to school. And I put that in quotations because I really cringe when I use the word safe, because it implies that other areas are unsafe to walk to school. But it's a word of art or term of art that we use for suggested routes to school, you know, routes to school that might be better than others. And at those meetings with the school district, the police department was involved, and a representative from SLOCOG, we looked at a method to basically create a route up San Jacinto to Cedar, crossing school hours along San Jacinto to accommodate that better. And in the afternoon, we kind of reversed that mode of bicycling and walking. So as we were developing the plan, we found a way within our existing funding to make some sidewalk and drainage improvements on that first block along San Jacinto to install a sidewalk and some cross gutters there to really improve the walking and drainage situation there. Unfortunately, well, maybe fortunately or unfortunately, what that required was to remove or not remove, as Mr. Sauerwein pointed out, not to be able to accommodate a marked bike lane on San Jacinto on the north side of the street for that block. So the way the street is configured right now, we have that first block that has a bike lane, a sidewalk on the south side, no sidewalk on the north side, no bike lane. And the kind of the methodology behind this, we were focusing mainly on elementary school age children getting to and from school. Since we did that work, we've heard from other users of the corridor, and suggestions have been made is to not just have the parking removed along San Jacinto during school hours, but 24/7, basically, so that it accommodates all pedestrians and cyclists. I mean, I suppose if we had unlimited funding, we would widen the street, put enough space for parking and bike lane and sidewalks. But at the present time, we don't have that. And I just have a kind of a footnote there that removing the parking would not impact Morro Bay Transit services. They can still pull over and stop in a no parking area because they're not parking the bus. They're stopping the bus. Another suggestion we had was to, add the bike lane along San Jacinto between Alder and Main Street. We had some complaints about sight distance at Alder and San Jacinto. Seeing if you were northbound at that intersection when vehicles are parked close to the corner, you have to stick your nose out there pretty far to see around them. I think I just addressed all my comments there, but not in the same order as I have them in my staff report. San Jacinto Street is, or San Jacinto Street is a major collector street on our plan. It needs to be able to accommodate all users, including motorists, bicyclists, and pedestrians along that corridor. Ultimately, what we need to do is to widen San Jacinto to accommodate bike lanes, parking, and sidewalk. We have the sufficient right-of-way there. We just don't have sufficient funding to make those improvements. As an interim step, I'm recommending that we do remove parking along San Jacinto, add the bike lane in that first block there, shift the center line back to the closer to the center of the street, accommodate the non-motorized users as well as the motorized users with that street. There appears to be sufficient parking since most of the houses that are on San Jacinto have double fronting lots. They have frontage on the tree streets on both sides, so there appears to be sufficient parking along there to accommodate the residents and their visitors. And with that concludes my staff report, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Before we get to questions, do we have any public comment? Please approach the microphone. As we're getting ready for the overhead, just state your name.
Good evening, Chairman, Honorable Board members. My name's Lanny McKay, and I live on San Jacinto Street. And I'm here to voice my concern about losing my parking out front. And think about making it no parking 24 hours a day eliminates any chance for me to be able to get commodities out of my vehicle. And losing my parking there would be very difficult for me. If we could have parking, no parking there from 8 to 10 in the morning and then again from 2 to 4 in the afternoon, so there was a window in between to move stuff, that would be available. As far as there being ample parking, There's not. I provide quite a bit of low-income housing there on that in the Sand Dollar, and I hate to give that up. I guess that's about all I've got to say. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Sorry. Are you located between Alder and Main on San Jacinto Street?
No, there's a Del Mar Deli there. I'm between Alder and Birch.
Oh, okay. And yours actually fronts San Jacinto Street, not fronting the two local streets, Alder and Birch on...
Alder and Birch. I face... One, two.
Because it looks like most of... I'm looking at Google Earth, and I don't know the
area
that
well. No, that's
okay.
Google Earth is okay.
Yeah,
but if you take a look at that, you'll see that there are one, two, three, four, there are four units that are facing Del Mar Deli
mm-hmm.
on Alder.
Oh, okay.
In addition,
oh, that's right. Alder and Birch were off one. I'm sorry. I know exactly where you're at. Any case, okay, so I see how it looks like you have walkways coming out of it down to San Jacinto Street right
and,
there.
And I do have a handicap ramp to get onto the property coming from San Jacinto to get in there. When they put in the handicap ramp at the corner on Birch Street, it comes around the corner and then it makes a cut back into the curb. And so, if you want to park over there, you've got either have to run over the curb or pull forward and then back into that corner to get a spot in there. There just really isn't ample parking in there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I do want to commend the work that was done on the curb and gutter and sidewalk. They did a good job. Thank you.
Well, good. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. Okay. And with that, understanding what's going on here, Rob, public comment. Do we have any comment, any commentary about it? We'll start down here, Deb.
Based on this gentleman's discussion with us, I was wondering... No parking. You say the buses can stop. I'm sure somebody could stop in front of their house and do something, run in the house, come out, and then move the car. But I know that handicap parking places are required in certain areas and in certain places, and I'm guessing that San Jacinto is not one of those streets that, because it has a business area down here towards the freeway, that it would not need handicap parking be accessible.
Typically, to install accessible parking as curbside parking requires more than just painting the curb blue. You need to make accommodation. You would have the sidewalk would depress along there, and you would have it's quite an extensive operation to get curbside accessible parking. That's why you don't see it very many places. I saw some... down in the San Diego area, when in a new area in San Diego, in a commercial area where they had actually installed it, and took some pictures of it, so that if we did want to pursue that in the future, I kind of knew some construction methods to do that. So, if we were to sign this or red curb this as no parking, the handicap sticker would not override. Red curb. I think what Mr. McKay was suggesting is if you look at the kind of the close-up overview and you see sidewalk on the south side of the street, he would suggest that we look to the north side of the street there and we have sufficient right-of-way to add some pavement over there. So that we could accommodate bicyclists and pedestrians on that side. We do have a...
I was just curious when you made the initial changes to San Jacinto and about how many complaints you have received so far after you've restriped it and tried to make it more accommodating for the go-to-school crowd.
Personally, to my office, I've received no complaints. I've heard from the complaints tend to come through the city council people, so they're receiving the complaint issues. I'm not sure if the offset center line is a problem per se. I drive offset center lines all the time in various cities that I go in. Mainly, they're involved with a left to accommodate a left turn lane. You need to offset the center line to do that. So I think people have learned to deal with the offset center line. I think the major issue appears to be to the east. Well, there's two issues. There's the area to the east of this block where there are really no improvements besides striping, and we're recommending to remove the parking 24/7 along there to accommodate the bikes and pedestrians that use that corridor not during school hours. The separate issue is to accommodate parking and all the lanes of traffic that we need in this block between Alder and Birch would require some widening of the street to do that.
Okay.
So that's it's kind of separated into two issues. The area east of Birch is a little bit easier to deal with than that block between Alder and Birch.
Okay. Well, and part of the reason that I'm asking the question is that it's never possible to accommodate all users. And so you're going to have trade-offs, and you're going to make somebody unhappy when you do something and somebody else unhappy when you do something else. And so, you have to make those balancing, which is more important. Is it satisfying the bikers and the people walking to school, or is it the people who live there who may need to park there? And I can't answer that question, but I'm sure you've given that consideration. And since you've already made a change, I'm wondering if it's been long enough to see if there are more complaints or fewer complaints, and why not give it more time?
Yeah. And we did send notice to all the within 300, all properties within 300 feet of the center line of San Jacinto about this meeting to see if they wanted to comment on it. That didn't result in any comments, and I told that in the notice I said this may result in removal of parking along there, kind of to get people's attention. It would get my attention if somebody told me parking in front of my street would be removed. So wanted to make that clear. And it's a fairly difficult to compromise in situations like this and try to get everybody happy. The goal of Complete Streets, the statewide policy, is to try to accommodate all users and make everybody happy. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if we have the funding to accomplish that, to make everybody whole in this situation. But there may be a compromise in this block. We can look at some minor widening there.
Okay. Rob, I have a quick question. Is this the only property that pretty much fronts on San Jacinto? As I look further east, it looks like most of them don't, until you probably maybe get down beyond Greenwood somewhere where...
There might be one or two properties that front on San Jacinto, but they also have Tree Street frontages or
because the thing I notice is you're right, moving a power pole costs money. It just does. I've been down that road before, but I was wondering if you were going to do a minor paving job and start it where that power pole is. I think that's all is that Birch or,
yeah.
From Birch, and then taper off so that you almost line the people up with where your intersection is at the west end. You might be able to accommodate him a little bit further to the west, maybe not right in front of his place, but you might create enough width there that
we could do a taper.
Accomplished. That's all because I know moving the pole kind of throws you out of the realm of where you really want to be with the cost of this project. That's my, in the, for what it's worth.
I like the idea of the taper there.
Yeah. If you taper, you'll line them up with your stop bars up there. And he could park a little bit further west to where that car is parked in that, you know, blow-up picture that I have in front of me, and you probably could accommodate him. And I like the parking leaving San Jacinto. I think that's a real good move for what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't looking for, I was just looking for comments on this.
Right.
This is, unfortunately, my hat that I get to wear, and then decision is appealable to council as the city's traffic engineer.
So you're just looking for suggestions?
Suggestions, input, comment. Take public comment.
Uh-huh.
It was very valuable.
Now, is there a reason they put handicap access on the Birch San Jacinto corner instead of the Alder San Jacinto?
Because I would not recommend that we curb mark that for blue curb for handicap parking, because we cannot meet all the ADA requirements. Blue curb in and of itself does not meet those requirements.
Okay.
There are more improvements that would have to be made to do that.
Okay. No, because I think the way that sidewalk went in, were because you live in the most west house, is that it?
Yes.
And so walking, if you parked up on Birch in San Jacinto, that's still, parking is hard, and then getting there is hard, walking down there, if you parked here. Okay.
Now I see what I will do is, before any improvements, we'll report back to the board and let you know what happens.
Yeah. Sure. Did you have another comment?
I just have a question for Mr. Livick. Do you know what it costs to move the power pole?
It depends if PG&E is in a cooperative mood or not.
I understand that.
Honestly, that is the problem. I know it. I do this for a living.
I understand that. Right.
I tried to move a power pole when I worked for the city of San Luis Obispo, and it was a crossing situation like this with primary crossing both directions, and we needed to move it 18 inches. It was $40,000 to move the pole 18 inches. So if we were going to move it 18 inches, we were going to move it 20 feet out of the way is what we ended up doing there. But that was for a major widening. I think board member Shively had a good point about starting the widening after the pole.
I thought
and,
so, too.
And tapering in, and we'll look at that and see what we can accommodate there.
I thought that was clever, but I just was curious, because not $40,000, but if it was considerably less, I'd be willing to pay the cost of moving the pole.
Well, part of the problem with moving the pole, though, is you're going to create an offset at that that intersection with Birch, because it'd be further paved. This way, you're actually transitioning the people over to the stop bars that take place at Main. It's actually a better design to have a taper there almost. Or if you're going to widen the entire San Jacinto Street on the north side, then
how far past the pole would you start the taper?
Almost immediately.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Well, there you go. Now you have a few more recommendations there, Rob.
Thank you for that design advice there.
What I do.
Uh-huh. Well, good, because since we redid that road, that is problematic over there. And living over there, I know that people are concerned.
And I just have to add that this isn't the ultimate fix for that intersection. Yeah, that intersection needs additional work there to make it function much better, but we'll take that on as a future project.
Okay, and so with that, Rob gets to deal with those recommendations. We move on to C4. Formation of PWAB subcommittee for the preparation of a request for proposals and assistance in the selection of a water and sewer rate consultant consultant recommendation. So, Rob, you want to explain this?
Sure. I took this item to City Council in October 22nd, and City Council recommended that we form a Public Works Advisory Board subcommittee to help in the preparation of a scope of work and select the a rate consultant, similar to what we did with the WRF consultant. So I provided my staff report that I took to council that gives some background of why we need to study rates, and we also need to look at rates more frequently than 20 years. So council would like assistance in developing a rate review policy along with just looking at the rates. So with that, what I'd like to do is have the board select a couple members to assist in the development of the RFP and then sit on the interview panel once we do select consultants and observation. So I would look like to have the consultant look at the rate structure along with what the rates should or should not be. And that concludes my staff report.
Could I ask a question?
Sure, please.
Oh, okay. I understand the water side of it. I really do. I think it's a good time to study water rates. I'm not quite sure with the wastewater when we're not even sure where we're going with the plant yet. And I saw a price in there of $75,000 to do the study. I was wondering if it could be split out where you're just doing one or the do you follow what I mean? Because yeah, yeah. I could see this thing changing 2 years from now, and you're back to, and you just had the people go through a tiered rate increases on the wastewater for about the last 4 or 5 years. I think every year, doesn't it kick up a certain percentage? And I feel like you might add to the uncertainty in this town if you come out with a rate structure and then you're coming back 2 years later after you have finalized where you're going with the water reclamation facility. The water side, I totally understand. You're not looking at any major infrastructure projects that I'm aware of, and I could see that being a slam dunk kind of thing to go through. It's just a question, Rob.
Okay. You know, we struggled with that that question also. When is the time to look at rates for wastewater? And when we did our rate study in 2008, we set a rate schedule that would increase by 5% a year for a residential and 7% a year for commercial. Subsequent court action ends that escalator cause after 5 years, so we have to go back and reassess those rates after 5 years. So we're at the end of those escalators. The other thought, and this will be something that, you know, if we proceed along this task and continue with the sewer rate increase, we know that it's going to be a big project, regardless of its, you know, where it was at its existing plant at $35 million or at some new location, something more than that. I'm not going to say $180 million because we're not going to build that project.
It ain't happening.
No. But we know it's going to be a large number, and we're going to have to go to debt to pay that down. Mm-hmm. The less we have to go to debt, the less we pay. So we know that we have collection system projects that need to be funded over the next few years. So I do think we still need to look at sewer rates, and even though we don't know the final dollar amount, mm-hmm. Since state law now has these five-year increments, yeah, we'll be looking at it again when we're probably into design of the plant anyway.
So you are going to move into a five-year planning study? And
I would recommend that, yeah, although we
I thought it was required, actually. That's why I'm a little confused.
That's the way most cities that I looked at.
Yeah, that's how I know it, yeah. So that's why I was asking the question.
We don't have a policy on reviewing rates locally.
So you feel if you put a rate structure in place now or a rate study, put a structure in place, it'd probably be 5 years before you revisit it again. It wouldn't be like coming on the heels a year or two later.
No.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough.
On the wastewater side, that would kind of coincide with if we continue on the aggressive schedule that we published, we would be in the final throes of facility master planning about that time, and we would be, you know, honing in on what that cost of that project would be, and then we would, the timing would work when we would need to look at sewer rates again.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
All right. So with that said,
I just have one more question and a comment. I just noted, because I read the city council minutes, and it seemed to me that it would be very helpful for the council to actually have a comparison of how the rates have changed over time. And I didn't see that in the materials that you provided to us. You provided the actions that were taken, but not how the rates have changed, both the sewer and water, over the past 20-year period. Because obviously they've gone up and there have been increases. And I think it would be helpful for them to see that information at the same time. And I also had a question about whether you were also looking at the rate structure as well as the rates themselves. And you've answered that question.
Yes. As far as rate escalation over time, in the past 20 years, water rates have not gone up at all. That we set a rate schedule back in 1995 or six, and it has stayed the same since. We were fortunate to...
Council did increase the sewer rates, and as I understand from the material you provided, it was really in planning for a remodel of the old wastewater treatment plant, so they upped rates to, and the fund balance there has been increasing over time. And I would agree with Steve that maybe it's premature to set.
One thing I will say, Marlis, and I understand where Rob's coming from, is the fact that he does have other infrastructure improvements in this town that he needs to quantify and cover monies for. As long as they're not looking to come in with the new rate structure based on the new plant until the five-year out point in time, I don't think it'll lend to the confusion. I'm just worried that people are going to be confused if they keep seeing it happen year after year kind of situation.
Yeah, I would not recommend that we plug in even the $90 million amount as a something that we're going to try to recover.
I think we're on the same page.
Yeah.
And
it's mainly adjustment to accommodate our existing operations.
All right. That's very helpful, because I'm sure that people are quite concerned about water rates and sewer rates, and that's going to come up. What exactly are these new rates going to cover? And it would be misleading if they assumed it was going to cover.
And one thing I will say, for being on state water, you have some of the most reasonable rates around for any community that's on the state water system.
And I also want to point out a little bit of the process side. We will perform this rate study, which would involve several public meetings and outreach. Then it would go to council probably a couple of times. They would accept the rate study and perhaps a rate structure. Then the decision is whether to implement that in the form of a Prop 218 vote. So we are a ways away from actually, just because we study it doesn't mean we actually increase the rates or adjust the rates. I'm not saying that we won't do that. And it's kind of the point is to get our rates in line with what our costs and expenses in line with our rates. Most rate consultants will look at your schedule of capital projects. Are you being too aggressive with your capital projects? Can you scale back on those to lessen the impact of rates? So we'll be looking at a variety of things. So
with that said, if I could add, because you both... Stephen and Marlis bring up the point. And as we've had this slightly escalating sewer project monies in the last few years working on capital projects, in terms of the public relations outreach, in terms of, because with the lift stations that we've improved with the various piping here in town, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've done a number of things infrastructure-wise with that money that we've been raising from the sewer monies, correct?
That's correct.
So in terms of the public relations looking to say this is what we're done, and this is why. Because if we haven't raised rates in 20 years, somebody might say,
Well, that's been a long time. It seems like we're still above board, so why do we need to raise rates? And your idea of looking at the schedule of capital projects for the sewer, especially looking ahead at the water reclamation facility, that's easily plausible to show people why. But in the same way, we have to be able to quantify and qualify to people if we're going to raise water rates, and we haven't done so in 20 years. Why do we all of a sudden need to raise water rates? Infrastructure-wise, I can understand that we're going to be putting in a wastewater treatment plant. But in terms of the public outreach and being able to explain, so it's a great time to do it, and I'm not saying I'm against raising. It's just a matter of putting it out there saying this is why we would be doing it. So I'm totally with you, Rob. So you need two people that are interested in being on this.
We would love to have two board members that had time. I don't think it's a long-term effort. I anticipate getting a draft RFP out in the next month, and probably, you know, the RFP out. It's really kind of a bad time of the year to be sending out RFPs, although when I was on the consulting side, we thought any time of the year was good to be receiving them. But we're going to try to get this out sometime around the first of the year, maybe a little bit before, maybe a little bit afterwards. I see maybe a couple of meetings, and then the interviews is the time commitment.
Okay. Do we have, before I just pick your names out of the hat, to anybody interested in being on this? The silence is overwhelming.
Could I have a question?
Sure.
You said you already had some drafts of some RFPs or something. So what is this really? What did we really?
So I have some samples of RFPs from other cities that have done this. They don't look terribly different from one another. It's kind of an accounting exercise that we're going through. They tend to use the same guidelines for rate analysis. I'd like to get this done as quickly as possible.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I it's a bad time for me right now, and that's why I stepped down. But if it was after the first of the year, then I would have.
I think we'll be close to the first of the year, but I'd like to get it going before then, to be honest with you.
I think I'm going to pass at this point.
I'd be happy to do it before I have other commitments, but
okay. So. Well, then I volunteer also, so let's get on it. All right. So Jan and Matt will be your recipients there, Rob. All right, we're waiting for you. Okay, that's what you needed, and you'll just keep us updated on what we need to do?
Exactly.
Okay, no
exactly.
problem. Okay. Yeah, well, I'm not coaching basketball this year, so why not? So there's no...
You'll be coaching staff RFP.
Yeah. So future agenda items, do we have any idea, Rob, what's coming in the future? Besides... Yes. Well, if we wait 2 months, well, actually, it's not. It looks like a month and a half. We're starting to wean PWAB off of all of these meetings, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay. And so with that, we are adjourned, and our next meeting is December 19th, Thursday. Imagine that, at 6 p.m. Okay, thanks a lot. And please, Morrow Bay, email us if you have any concerns about anything that was said at the meeting. Thank you. All right.